Gay marriage is now legal in the heartland state of Iowa, and many people think the Iowa State Supreme Court's decision represents a turning point in the movement for marriage equality. My guest, Camilla Taylor, was the architect of the case and its lead lawyer. She's a senior staff attorney in the Midwest Regional Office of Lambda Legal, a legal organization which works for the civil rights of lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgender people. Camilla Taylor, welcome to Fresh Air. Why did you think Iowa would be a good place to sue on behalf of the right for right of gay people to marry?
Well, thanks so much for having me, Terry. We really believed that Iowa could open the door to equality for the Midwest. And in addition to having very strong precedent with respect to liberty and equality and a tradition of independence in the state courts in Iowa, there was also a long and rich tradition of doing the right thing in a number of civil rights struggles that came before us. And just to give you a few examples, Iowa was the first state to admit a woman to the practice of law, and Iowa permitted women to own property. Very early in the 19th century, actually at a time when most other states still considered married women to be property themselves. And Iowa's courts desegregated Iowa's schools almost 100 years before Brown versus Board of Education. And Iowa was one of the first states actually to eliminate its ban on interracial marriage. So we knew we could rely on Iowa's tradition of standing up for what's right, often long before other states. And we also had spoken to a number of couples, you know, dozens of couples, if not more, over a period of years who had been eager for us to bring a lawsuit on their behalf. And all of these couples assured us that they would be treated fairly and with respect, and that we could bring a lawsuit and have it embraced by the people of Iowa.
Was there also like a symbolic function in your mind? Because like Iowa symbolizes the heartland. So if you could win in the heart of the heartland...
I think that's absolutely right. I think in many ways this decision, both that it was unanimous and that it was in the heartland, has been more effective than any other marriage case so far in demonstrating that really it is just the common sense and decent thing to do to strike down discrimination in marriage, and that it's consistent with the most core mainstream American values of fair treatment by government, for example, or commitment to families, to end discrimination in marriage, and to make sure that everyone is treated equally.
So this was a judicial case. You know, you were suing in the court, so you didn't need, like, the popular vote. You didn't need the legislature. But did you want popular support anyways? Did you lay the groundwork for popular support even though there wasn't going to be a vote?
Absolutely. We think it's actually irresponsible to bring a lawsuit if you are not also doing your homework with respect to building public support for the essence of the lawsuit, for what it is that you're trying to do through the courts. And so it's our obligation, I think, to make sure that we can bring along with us the hearts and minds of the people of the state. And so we had been working in Iowa for years with Iowans on the ground, trying to do grassroots organizing and to start a conversation with people across the state about why it is that it is so very unfair to exclude some families from the protections and the responsibilities of marriage.
What was your most winning argument? What was the argument that you felt had appeal to convince people who weren't already on board about gay marriage?
Well, I think the most effective thing is to have the families who are affected, who are really harmed by the exclusion from marriage, out there talking to their communities. And there were a number of stories that they told that I think really changed people's hearts and minds. And one of those stories was a story that we highlighted in the oral argument before the Iowa Supreme Court, in addition to in our briefing in the case. And this was the story told by a couple from Iowa City, Jen and Don Barbarowski. And they have two beautiful daughters who are now 11 and 8. But when the eldest daughter was preschool age and they were seeking a preschool for her, they interviewed a number of preschool directors and visited a number of places. And they were about ready to put their money down on a place that seemed perfect when they thought to ask the director of the preschool whether their daughter would be treated any differently because she had two moms. And the director of this preschool answered, after thinking about it for a moment, well, she won't be allowed to give a presentation on her family during the unit when all of the children are invited to stand up before the class and talk about their families. So it became clear to them that their daughter would be forced to sit alone listening to stories about families told by every other child in the class. And this was really a demonstration of what happens when you exclude some families from marriage, when you, as a government, as a society, send a message that some families shouldn't be treated equally or they're less deserving of dignity or respect than other families. You hurt the whole family, and the children suffer as much as anyone else.
So when the Iowa Supreme Court handed down its decision, what parts of that decision did you think were most significant in setting the tone or setting a precedent for other states?
Well, I think the decision was significant not just because it was unanimous and issued by a court that included both Republican and Democratic nominees, and not just because it was in the heartland, but because of the substance of the decision as well. And for one thing, Iowa is now the third high court to rule that classifications based on sexual orientation merit heightened scrutiny. And what that means in layperson terms is that when a law singles a group of people out based on their sexual orientation for different treatment, that a court has to look particularly carefully at that classification to see if it's in some way motivated by discrimination. And that's because of the history of discrimination against gay people, and also because we know that sexual orientation doesn't have anything to do with an individual's ability to contribute to society. There were a couple of other things that I think were particularly noteworthy about this decision. One of the things that the court did was to address in very simple terms the argument made by many people that is faith-based. Many people who are people of faith believe that marriage is exclusively between a man and a woman and would like to exclude other people from marriage. And the court pointed out that government has no business interfering in church matters, and that churches will continue to be able to do whatever they have done in the past. They will continue to be able to make their own decisions about whom to marry. That the case concerned only civil marriage, marriage licenses issued by government. And by addressing this argument head on and by talking about the separation between church and state, I think the court made a powerful statement that will be read widely and will be effective in showing that the discussion that takes place among many faith traditions about marriage for same-sex couples is a really distinct discussion that has no place in courtrooms when we're talking about government's obligation to treat people fairly. Well, what we won was a decision from the Iowa Supreme Court that the Iowa Constitution guarantees the right to marry for same-sex couples, which means that under state law, Iowa same-sex couples must be treated equally to different-sex couples. Unfortunately, the federal government still purports to deny any form of legal recognition for relationships between same-sex couples. So what this means is that Iowa couples who marry will still not be able to get any of the thousands of federal rights and responsibilities and protections available to married couples.
Last November, Californians voted for Proposition 8, which basically overturned the right to marry that gays and lesbians had recently won in California. And that seemed like a real setback to the gay rights movement. But subsequent to that, gays have won the right to marry in Iowa and Vermont. So looking back now, how do you see Prop 8 as fitting into your fight to legalize gay marriage?
When Prop 8 passed, it was a really disappointing blow. And we and a number of other legal organizations immediately filed a challenge to Prop 8. We were honored to have the support, in addition, of a number of organizations representing people of color and representing women and many others. And the essence of the challenge is that Prop 8 was not passed with the proper deliberative process that is required when you're going to make such a fundamental change to a state constitution and to California's constitution in particular. We're expecting an answer from the California High Court in this legal challenge by the beginning of June, so we will know whether Prop 8 has been upheld.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are assuming that you're a lesbian and that's why you care so much about the issue of gay marriage, but you're straight. You're married to a man, and you still care a lot about the issue of gay marriage. So why has this become your cause?
It's true. I am married to a man, a wonderful man. We got married in June of 2005, and we have a daughter who will turn 2 in July. But I wanted to become involved in this movement from the time I was in law school, and it became apparent to me, you know, I have enormous respect for all of the civil rights activists who came before us and the people who fought so hard in the courts and as grassroots activists for rights for people of color and for women. And it became clear to me that it is my social justice movement, too, because I don't want to live in a country in which people are treated unfairly. I don't want to be a person taking advantage of privilege and bias. And so it's, you know, part of that age-old feeling that so many, I guess, members of social justice movements have felt, which is that we're not free until everyone is free. And so it does feel like it is my movement because of my obligation as an American to do something about discrimination, I suppose. I'm not sure how to put it differently.
So how many gay couples in Iowa have gotten married since the state's Supreme Court decision, approximately?
I don't know how many couples at the moment. Marriage has only been available for a little over a week. But on the very first day that marriage was available, the Des Moines Register published an account that suggested about 380 couples around the state had applied for licenses. And there is a 3-day waiting period in Iowa for marriage licenses that applies. So you can begin to get married after those 3 days, but you can get married for a long time after that. So I don't know how many of those couples have actually gotten married at this stage.
So you're getting a lot of invitations to gay weddings?
I have been invited to a couple, and I'm really looking forward to going. I will try not to cry.
Camilla Taylor, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Terry, for having me.
Camilla Taylor was the lead lawyer on the case that resulted in the legalization of gay marriage in Iowa. She's a senior staff attorney in the Midwest Regional Office of Lambda Legal, which advocates for the civil rights of gays and lesbians. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.